Good evening, everybody.
Good evening.
We seem to be having a minor heat wave. If anyone does feel like they need to take the jacket off or jump, feel free. Having come out of the deepest, darkest Ranton, it's quite amazing to come here and it's all hot. I'm glad I'm not paying the bill.
Yeah.
Myself, everyone is. Right. Before we start the official business, I'm given to understand that Angela Loughran's not having a good time at the moment. And I wondered if it would be appropriate for the committee to send her a card wishing her the best. Okay. We tend to push on you a little bit, Jackie, but would you sort that out?
Yep, that's fine.
Are you happy if we don't all sign it, but just put from the... It's wonderful. And if you and I could sign it, perhaps would be a good one. Okay, let's press on then. Are you okay?
Yep.
Minutes of the... meeting of the 16th of December. I presume everybody's read them and gone through them in great depth. Are you happy we signed them off?
As published and read, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Are we all happy with that?
Yeah.
Thank you. Public question time. We have no one. Have we any apologies?
Councillor Loughran substituted by Councillor Hobbs and Councillor Reid substituted by Councillor Thorley.
Okay, thank you both. And we'll move on, as we should do, to public question time.
No.
Nil. Councillor session.
No.
Nil. And called in items. Nil. Members' items, again, nil. So we move straight into the main body of the report and the scrutiny tonight. Passing over to Chris for general fund revenue budget and capital programme.
As usual, I don't intend to labour it. You've got the papers in front of you, so I'll just go through and pick out some of the key elements of it. Hopefully everyone will recognise that the settlement wasn't as bad as we were initially forecasting, or as we've been led to believe by our meetings with some of the central government people. This is largely in part due to us being quite prudent with our forecasting last year. We didn't factor in a lot of those one-off grants, and we didn't factor in any kind of transitional funding with the business rates growth reset. So by doing that, we started from quite a prudent base position. When the settlement came in, as per table one, you can see that we gave 1.3 million
£3.3 million. Chris, could you give us a page number when you do that?
Table one, page five.
Thank you.
Page seven on
ours, yeah.
Okay, I'll add two. So we got 1.3 million more than we did in 25-26. Now, in part, this seems like a huge increase or a real difference for us, but it's because we're so used to flat settlements or indeed reductions year on year. So really and truly, this is largely in line with inflation, which I've highlighted lower down in the report. Yeah. So it kind of matches our cost increases, but that's still a much better position than we thought we'd be in. You can see that we are quite dependent on the transitional protection, so 300,000 of it in 26-27. This is because of a grant that we're being paid to ensure that we don't drop below 95% of the base calculated position. The base calculated position being then feeding through our 25-26 settlement through the fair funding formula. So that starts out as if we'd had a fair funding that year, and then make sure we don't drop below 95% of that amount over the next 3-year cycle. So you'll see that transitional grant each year for the next 3 years. And I'll go into that in a bit more detail in one of the tables lower down. Council tax is budgeted to go up 2.99%, and that is largely hard baked into the settlement. As you can see, to achieve our core spending power, percentages and the amounts that we're expected to get, that's built in there. And I think it would be frowned on if we weren't looking towards that maximum amount. It does create a financial sustainability for us as well going forward. So the table that I think quite important for that is on page 6, the change in core spending for power and biopolicy time. You can see that the fair funding formula has effectively redistributed the amount of money within the system, so there's no additional money at this stage, amongst the different authority types. And substantial amounts have gone to metropolitans and upper tier as opposed to shire districts. So we end up with a much smaller element of the pie than all of those other council types. So hopefully this starts to give us context in terms of our final settlement figures and why we had to be so prudent with what we were doing. This probably starts to lead towards local reorganisation and their views on that going forward, which is featured throughout the report. I won't deal with, in terms of inflation, we've got a provision of 3% in 6.7 and 3% 7.8, 3% 8.9, largely in line with the Bank of England forecasts. We haven't done anything drastic there, but we've been prudent with it. The key spending changes that are detailed in page 8 and 9, so the bottom of page 8. When we were being told that the sector would be quite challenging, I mean, the business rate piece that was coming in, his officers started to look for things that we could do to start to potentially mitigate that. So when the pension was valued this year, we had a reduction of 610,000 against the 26-27 budget. This is because when the valuation took place this year, we are significantly overfunded on our current LGPS position. Because of that, the actuaries offered us a number of options in terms of our future funding, and we picked a more aggressive approach whereby the council pays less into the pension fund going forwards to realise those benefits now. We could have taken one of the other options which would have yielded a small saving, but the offset against us taking the bigger saving is there's a potential risk in future years if assets start to underperform or investments start to lose money, a gap would open. I don't think that's a huge concern to this council, as in theory we will be dissolved in a couple of years. So this is a 3-year valuation cycle. It will not be an issue for us to solve either way. So I think it made sense to take the benefit now to help us with our budgets.
Through you, Chair, could I ask a question?
Carry on.
Why did we have a 600,000 increase in the gap between the asset value and the liabilities of the pensions scheme?
So the gap was... there was no gap, so we were overfunded. I'd have to check the exact figure, but to the tune of something like 120% of the total assets would have covered the future liabilities and the future payments and everything else. So we only had to make up what we were originally forecasting. The difference between the two is that 610,000. So it's not to do with the assets themselves, it's to do with the amount we have to contribute to close the gap between the investments that were being realised and the amount of contributions for future liabilities. Well, I can share that with you in more detail. The actuarial report.
My understanding that a lot of it is being created by decreased liabilities because of the rising interest rates.
Some of it is from us as well, yes.
Could you give me sort of approximate promotion?
Not off the top of my head. I can get the actuarial report, it's very, very detailed, but I can share that with you.
That would be fine, thank you very much.
So fundamentally, some of it is because of that, some of it's asset returns, some of it's life expectancy changes, it's a changes in our demographics, changing our workforce makeup, there's a huge slew of things. The table's
as
like
ever,
this big. So I've just condensed it down to that element, which fundamentally is a simplification. So I'm not going into the primary and secondary contribution rates or any of that kind of stuff, but we can go through all of that.
Yeah, that'd be great.
But the bottom line impact is that 610 saving in year.
Yeah.
We've seen a reduction in utility costs, as we all have, particularly around our core contracts, that's been built into those. And some of the key things we've done are building in the home services staff into our core budget. Previously they've been funded from grants, so there's always a degree of uncertainty around funding their posts on a medium term basis, because we're never quite sure of the grant amounts. By moving into our base budget, we can give them that certainty and remove that element, and any grant funding we get now can be deployed to fund the service. So that's a big step forward for us. The council purchased the Civic Centre successfully in 25-26, so we've reduced the base budget contributions by 776,000 to reflect that rent is no longer needed to be paid on the building. An additional rental income has been achieved at the Civic Centre of £140,000. So that was a new contract we signed with Reed and Stairs and the DWP. The revised recycling income stream of £490,000 anticipated. So this is from the extended producer responsibility scheme. So that's the amount we're charging those who create a large amount of waste or what have you. Central government collects it and we're getting that paid to us. We've been prudent in our estimates around that going forward, as it's not guaranteed on an ongoing basis. And then finally, we've got the additional cost of food waste at £1.069 million, which is in theory hard-baked into the revenue support grant amount that we were given. So that's in the grant settlement at the top. There is a specific grant for that line. Business rates income, there's potential volatility around this, and we're not 100% sure where that is going to end up at the moment. There's potential changes around hospitality, pubs and what have you are seen in the press, so I'm not sure if that will come through or not. If it does, we're again not sure if we'll be compensated or how we'll be compensated. As you'll see from the table, Section 31 grants have been removed, and that was the old mechanism for compensating us for statutory reductions in business rates. So I don't know how that will work, which is partly why we changed some of the key recommendations. So we've asked for authority to be given to myself in consultation with the portfolio holder so that I can make adjustments to the reserve position in light of any changes in the final local government final settlement, as it's still only provisional and there might be subsequent changes. So, and I won't be able to bring this back through the cycle times. There's no way I can. So, consultation with Councillor Cook. And we've also asked for delegated authority to myself in consultation with Councillor Cook so we can deploy, add items to the budget funded from reserves in line with the purpose of the reserve. Again, we will do a report subsequently to detail what's gone on with those elements. But it's because of the uncertainty around the provisional settlement, we don't have a lot of options on this one. And I'm sure we will see. I'm not quite sure business rates will end up at this moment. Okay. So if we go to those funding changes, that's great. The forecast outturn on page 9 it starts. We can see that the forecast outturn on the portfolios is a £1.6 million underspend. The major change or the main driver for that you'll see is environmental services. That's in respect of the extended producer responsibility payments. That grant being coming through, and there no longer being a rental charge for the council to occupy the civic centre. So you're seeing those big underspends coming through for because of those drivers. The rest of it's largely in line with what you'd expect. We have built in a number of additional asks from budget holders, from heads of service. They're detailed in Appendix 7. So we thought it'd be quite helpful to be really transparent around these. You can see literally everything that every head of service asked for, and see it built into the budget. Pretty much everything that was asked for we actually approved in the end, due to the position we were in. We ran the process where heads of service were involved. We worked with them, budget managers, we asked them what they needed, and we then built that into the base budget position. It's been explained to them that going forwards there won't be any additional growth in budget unless there's the health and safety or a demonstrable service need. They need to deliver the increase in the budgets they've had in Appendix 7, which are pretty substantial considering the scale of the authority. So there's a lot of delivery by the heads of service going forwards. I will chase that through and hopefully that will be reported as we go through the cycle on an ongoing basis.
Page by page on that.
At present, as per paragraph 5.29, the council forecast a £0.5 million deficit.
What page are we on? Sorry, I'm
paragraph 5.29.
Page 10.
A £0.5 million deficit over the budgeted for position for investment income. That's due to reductions in interest rate and the use of reserves in relation to the purchase of the council building. But despite that, taking into account other technical adjustments, it results in a favourable overall forecast outturn of £460,000. So that's pretty good at this point in time compared to our base budget position and all the changes that we built in and everything else that's happened to us. It's pretty good. The revenue budget summary, paragraph 5.31 at the start at, on page 10, I guess that will be for yourselves, and then going on to page 11. Details of revenue budget we're recommending to council. So you can see at the bottom line the transfer from or to balances. over the full life of the budget, it's a balanced budget position, which is pretty fantastic. We'll be returning to balances in every year. But it does get smaller towards the end, down to 14,000. And it must be noted that the transitional protection grant that I did a nod to earlier makes up a pretty big proportion of our total income by 28-29. So 3.5 million of our income from government will be transitional protection grant, so we don't drop below the 95% floor. So we're very dependent on that element of it. If we just look at that national picture, I think it's about 75% of the income growth over the 3 years is going to be derived from council tax increases across the country. So there isn't a lot of new money coming to the system. An awful lot of it is being raised locally. There's a lot more pressure on the players to fund themselves going forward. I don't think there's anything else of any great note there, other than you can see the mechanism changing from our previously a number of different grant lines of financing all being constituted up into revenue support grants effectively. So there's much less, far fewer grant lines that we have to look at.
Chris, could I just ask a second question, Chair?
I think if we've got questions as we go through it, we'll lose them if we don't pick them up, so we'll carry on.
Yeah, I understand the transitional grant in 26-27 of 303.
Yeah.
But there's an indicative budget 27-28 of 1882.
Yes.
Which is a lot bigger than 303.
Yes.
Whereas I thought you were indicating we were getting 303 every year.
No, the transitional protection grant is over the 3 years. It drops us below the 95% floor. The formula doesn't stand still year on year. So if you look at the revenue support grant line in 27-28, you can see that dropping from 8 million down to 6 million from 26-27 to 27-28.
Yeah.
That's being made up by an increase in transitional protection grant from 303,000 to 1.8 million.
Right.
And then a consequential drop 27-28 to 28-29 from 6 million to 3.955 in revenue support grant, effectively being offset by an increase in transitional protection grant from 1.8 to 3.5. So the formula each year would mean that our needs assessment is reducing year on year as a proportion of our total element. And that protection makes sure we don't drop below the floor, because without that grant, you can see how big the budget deficit would climb quite quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's why that first table, when I was referring to how it's all being redistributed to different council types, is so important.
Yeah.
We are getting that big share of that redistributed pie, and we're being made up by this protection grant.
Right.
Can I ask, and I'm sure it's easily answered, the 3 years taking us up to 2028-29, at what point are we supposed to be going through the local government reorganisation?
Well, in theory, it will be live in 2 years, so there'll be shadow elections next year, live the subsequent year. But this budget would take us slightly longer than that, so that's what we base this budget on. Next year, I think I'll still do a 3 year budget if I can. Because it's only 3 years settlement, perhaps they'll issue us for the next few years to it. I don't know. I don't know if I will, if we will be able to set the budget next year either, if statutory instruments are issued later this year in light of LGR. So there's a degree of speculation there, but you're right, this would take us slightly longer than LGR's implementation.
So the picture just gets more and more complicated in terms of local government reorganisation, because as you said, there's possibly elections sometime, and then we've got the finances looking really good here, and they are looking good, and in 3 years time nobody knows. It's not a way to run a business.
It's very challenging. It's going to be hard for heads of service to deliver on ourselves in the core corporate resources at the same time as doing LGR and running this council, and then at some point next year potentially supporting a shadow council. It's going to be serving a lot of masters at once. It will be difficult and very, very resource intensive. As I've detailed throughout the report, that thread is likely to be expensive as well. But at this point in time, we're not sure. We haven't had that final nod about what shape Staffordshire will take, who, which authorities will be merged, what we'll end up with, how it will be funded. It's all a little bit unclear at this moment in time.
Because the interesting bit for me is that we're supposed to be doing this from central government as a way of releasing money into the into the service sector, and what it's actually doing is just the costs of doing it will correct me if I'm wrong, the costs of actually doing that will supersede the savings. Am I correct in saying that?
There are some risks around this. There are pretty substantial setup costs and getting it moving. We'd have to see what shape that we get, because there's a number of different business cases floating around with very different cost bases at the moment. So I wouldn't be able to say definitively how that would end up. But there is a risk that the setup costs could reduce savings. You just have to hope that on an ongoing basis they'd be sufficient. Mm. But I think it's been made clear that LGR isn't about deliver savings, it's about service delivery enhancement and scale and robustness. Yeah, that's what the minister said.
Where does money come from?
That's a good question. But at the moment,
can we mean it though? Have we got an answer?
No, I think the moment we set the budget for staff and borough council and then we'll see what comes next.
Okay.
Thank you. Sorry to ask a couple of difficult ones.
No, reserves and balances, so page 12, paragraph 5.39. We detail those in appendix 5 and appendix 3. So at the 151, I've signed off that we're in a robust financial position. We do have robust reserves. We have a balanced position over 3 years. And we have pretty significant investment for appendix 7. But heads of service do deliver going forwards. We maintain our minimum working balance at over minimum comfortably over the life cycle. The capital programme detailed in appendix 2. So we hopefully be able to see this tying through from appendix 7, somebody asks the heads of service. So we've added to the capital programme things like the natural vehicle, environment vehicles for Justice area. That's going to be cleaning the streets and what have you. And other changes that have got year-end slippages. To be transparent, we also changed the funding mechanism for the former Wilco side from council resources to future high street spend. It's just a flip over the background, essentially. Those monies are not disappearing and the overall funding on work isn't changing. It's just the priority that we're spending the money on. Nothing more than that. The capital tax base is detailed in Appendix 4 in the number of bandies, and we have seen growth there of 662.16, which is really good news. That's positive for our area. And the 2.99% we've already detailed, with a bandy equivalent at £184.09 for overlay of council tax. And I'll go into a bit of detail about the future risks and challenges for the council. Really, I'm talking a lot about the recruitment issues. So LGR happening is going to be a real issue for us recruiting. Not many people are going to want to join us, likely on an ongoing basis. The uncertainty that we present is going to be challenging to try and recruit people in. There's also a risk people that we have maybe start looking elsewhere because they want to make sure they have certainty around their roles. It's just going to be a really difficult situation to manage as our workload substantially increases at the same time, which may drive us to costs if we're looking at agency. If we can get agency, as there's so many councils going to be doing this at the exact same time across the country, it's likely rates are going to start climbing quite substantially. We all saw this with HS2 when that came on stream. Significant cost increases for the staff that everybody wanted at the same time. There's not much we can do to mitigate it, but a little bit about cyber security and just the general pressures around delivering LGR. So, a bit of a gallop through it there, but that's the gist of it.
Okay.
Thank you, Jeremy. Chairman, you've already said yourself, this seems like a good budget. I agree. It is a good budget for Stafford. It's been a hard-fought budget. The officers, the finance team, have worked incredibly hard on the whole thing. You can see the chief finance officer has told you the bandy rate for 26-27. That comes to about 10p a week. 10.2p a week, if you want to be precise, but not 10p a week for the bandy rate band. And I may say though, Jim, we have reached this point by being cautious and prudent, and there are words that the chief finance officer mentioned as well. And I think that's also something we've got to continue to do, because we are going to have future challenges. They've already been mentioned, and you'll find them in paragraph 5.53. There are a number of headwinds facing us, and we're going to have to face those and do something about them. And they could be difficult and they could be painful. But nevertheless, we're going to have to battle through those. They're all going to be there. But I'm sure, Chair, that you would want to, on behalf of the committee, thank Chris, Emma, and the finance team.
Let's see how they go through the questions first, and then we'll thank them. So, does the committee's asked questions as we've gone along? Is there anything else that's standing out?
Yeah.
We'll start here, and then Emma.
On Appendix 7, right, there's some of these approvals. From pages 58, 59 going on, are for staffing costs. Some of these figures look pretty high.
Mm-hmm.
Are those figures inclusive of the national insurance and the pension contributions?
These are absolute costs, yes.
All right, okay. My only other one was you've set up costs for the food waste is just over $1 million. Is that for purchasing the bins and who's going to supply those bins?
So, we'll comment. I don't know who the actual supplier was, but we already bought them. We were given a capital grant for them. They were bought, stored. Have they been given out?
No, they're stored at the moment.
They're stored, are they?
Yeah.
I remember the debate. Yeah. Colour, are they?
Grey.
They better be.
They were grey, weren't they?
They should be, if they're like other councils. Oh, okay. That was Mr.
Okay.
Shannon's own too. We've got some others, but I think they can wait.
I'll let you go first, Emma. Sorry.
It was just around the challenges around recruitment and obviously the risk that faces. My question is more about the resourcing risk of it, not necessarily the financial risk. Is there scope when we're thinking about our HR strategy over the next couple of years to look at how we might pool, second, work with other local authorities, particularly once we've got that clarity in the summer about who we're likely to be assigned with or collected with as part of local government reorganisation? To kind of help smooth that transition a bit, because I am conscious of the flightiness that staff might feel, which I would feel similarly in that situation, but also is there scope for us to start doing that within our HR strategy? I know we already obviously do with CAC, but...
Yes and no. So there will be where we're working together jointly with the other councils to set up the new authority. There is an expectation that we'll come together, we'll second, what have you, to create a team to do that, but that won't deal with the whole council's problems. It has the potential to make it worse, because as we take people off to do that work, it leaves gaps, and we've yet to work out how we're going to do that. We are looking to see what other options might be available to us, more about retaining the ones we've got and perhaps making it more attractive. But again, we need to find a way that we can do that's equitable, and doesn't leave us vulnerable to challenge and what have you. And we are constrained because we have national pay scale, so it's how we work around all of that and try and maintain a stable workforce. But it is one of our priorities. We've acknowledged that from the people work stream, that keeping our staff on board, motivated, is going to be critical.
Just to follow up through you, Chair, I think it'd be quite useful as we move into getting an understanding of what that new authority might look like. In future meetings, that being part of what comes out of corporate reporting around the progress on how we're putting those staff in place. I don't appreciate there won't be like a KPI on it, but like an update as part of the corporate reporting, I think would probably be quite helpful so we can see.
There's provision within the practice of delivery plan for updates on HR, so we'll make sure that we do that. We're just in such early stages, we don't even know at the moment whether the countywide group network that's been talked about, whether that's going to get around or not.
It's more like a future.
Okay, can I suggest, Emma, that when we get to the work programme, you have a think about how, because that's the place to sort of bring it up. as we go forward.
Wouldn't necessarily need a separate item, more just as part of the performance reporting you receive normally, rather than a separate item on the work program.
Well, I don't know. I think it's quite. You've picked up quite a pertinent part of it. Can I ask one more for myself about the food waste? It's sort of, and I hate to describe it as such, but it feels to me like it's been slipped in without a lot of. Communication to the general public. So it sounds to me like this green grey bin's going to appear and no one really knows what's going on.
Well, I think that was part of the task and finish we discussed with the team, and they said they are going to have a communication strategy going forward. There will be a leaflet in the actual caddy, the food caddy, but that's when they're delivered. And I think that's all happening April the 13th. So we've got time between now and then to keep pushing it out to the public. And Jackie was saying that there's going to be a national sort of communications campaign as well.
And it's the 13th of Friday.
Do you want to find out?
There has been a drop leaflet.
Oh, right.
There's also going to be stickers put on your green bin to tell you not to put food waste in there in the future. So they're trying to find different mechanisms of reaching everybody.
We've been doing it in Newcastle Underline for 11 years. You know, lots of places. Kent have been doing it for years. You know, it's other parts of the country that are now catching up because it's become mandatory.
Yeah, it just does my head in slightly. This is just be that we have a brown bin for the green stuff and a green bin for the black stuff, and now we're having a grey bin for the food, so it's sort of anyway, that's just me. And
one of the things with the cost was the plastic bag,
lots of disagreements about the bag because to get a good uptake, what they found across the country is that people like to have a plastic bag in the caddy so that then they can just tie it off and put it into the bigger bin, which clips shut, so you can't get mice or rats or anything. But we didn't really like the idea because we thought, well, it's more plastic in the system. But it's a very low uptake if you don't have the plastic bags, and you can't really use recycling bags because they start to degrade in the caddy almost immediately. So it's a tricky one.
Right.
But the way they process it is with these two big, well, I imagine two, I don't know whether it's two or not, but these great big screws that turn as it's poured into this machine, and then it's sieved and goes out the other side.
There's only a small amount of plastic.
Tiny amount of plastic.
Okay, so and we shouldn't have, as chairman, I shouldn't have allowed that to go over, but it is very interesting for all of us, I think, and the general public. Potato skin plastic.
But it melts straight away when you've got it in the caddy.
No. You're talking to someone who developed some of it way back in 1960 something.
Well, that's what we were told.
Yeah.
That was done by the office.
Biodegradable plastic has come a long way since then.
Right. It's not our scrutiny that should really be answering that.
No, I think they genuinely wanted a big uptake.
Right. So if we get back to business, the front page really says it all, and I think some of the highlights are working funds set at 1 million, 2.99 increase in council tax.
What page, sorry?
Back to page 3 at the start. So it's got all the executive.
We're asked to recommend to council. I propose that we recommend to council all of those items in paragraph 2.1.
Okay, have we got a seconder on that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry, he was
I actually think that
I raised to the front, did I?
You did, just for once. And follow. So can we have a vote on that, please? All in favour? Okay, thank you. And on that basis, can I thank Chris and his team on behalf of the committee and the cabinet member as well, for putting this together. And it's very complicated, but I feel it's going to get more complicated, not less, as time goes on. So, but anyway, thank you very much.
Well done, Chris.
And we move on to, please, fees and charges, page 62. That's 60 for you, Chris. I'm having problems here. All right.
Next page, 62.
Brain's not working. Right. So, Chris.
So, the fees and charges is as in front of you. The proposed fees and charges we're asking to recommend is specifically any new charges contained in paragraph 5.1. At any relative increase greater than 4.3%. We've also got where there's any new charges, where there's an increase above the annual level of inflation, and where the power to set fees and charges for specifically reserved by the council. So quite a bit of delegated down. We used for October 25 inflation, we're running at 3.8% CPIH or 4.3% RPI. So we recommend around 4% increases in line with our costs, say at least. Then you'll see that this will tie across into the other report in terms of the risks of government reorganisation and the 95% protection, because basically fees and charges underpin quite a bit of our income streams. And you can see that on the SIPA toolkit if you jump on their website to see our financial resilience. I don't think there's anything any good rate there is any real concerns in here. I think the ones that you probably want to pick up are the fees on car parking and the garden waste connection for 12 months. But on that, they are as presented. Nothing that contributes anything this year.
Right, so I suggest we go through it page by page, and if anyone's got anything that sort of jumps out at them, please indicate. So start of it is page 62, 63,
new
charges in paragraph 5.10, but the new charges are actually paragraph 5.9. Oh. Sorry. Okay. Mm-hmm.
They're deleted ones
are 5.10. Yeah. We'll get that changed. Consider your hand slapped. Right. Page 65. Page 66. Page 67. And that's the end of the report. Do we have to vote on this?
There's a recommendation to take it to. Did the cabinet member want to speak? No. You didn't want to speak, no.
The recommendation on 2.1.
Right.
I propose that.
Okay, a seconder. Anne? Okay.
Okay,
and so those in favour? Thank you. Moving on to the work programme. Do you want to say anything on this, Jackie, or?
This would probably be, Judith, maybe?
Yeah, Judith.
Yes, Chair. So we've had a quick review of the work programme, and we've taken a couple of things off associated with shared services and transformation which isn't now going to happen. The committee's got enough work that will see it through to the end of this year, but we just thought we'd mention it when we were starting to give some thought just to what we might want to add for the new municipal year. I say you have got enough to see you through because you've still got the task and finish groups to conclude a couple of the pieces of work, so I'm just really flagging that.
Okay, and Emma?
Could I put an opposite point of view?
You can.
The gap that produces gives the committee the opportunity to look at all the new stuff that's going to come forward, which will otherwise be a horrendous workload. Because we don't know what's coming down the tube, really, do we? So to have a gap that is not currently filled gives us an opportunity to actually look at the new stuff in some detail when we know what it is.
At the moment you've got the catch-all of local government reorganisation on the agenda, which is probably going to be where all of the significant chunk of the original work is going to come from.
Emma, do you want to put any words down for, or have words put down for what you were talking about?
Yeah, so I think probably just as a sub item under local government reorganisation, I think whilst there is a lot that is unknown, what we do know is we would like specifically to see the progress in terms of our staffing, our retention, how we're able to recruit people as like a specific standing item once we have obviously clarity about who we've been bundled in with for this journey, which until then we obviously can't speculate and it's pointless to speculate, but once we do know who we're bundled in with, it's possible that we can then start having some reports and conversations about that. But I put it staff and provisions, you'll find it much more form of words to use, I'm sure.
Okay, is everyone happy with what's in front of us? Thank you to all those involved. Budget time is always an interesting time, and I found tonight very interesting, so thank you all for participating. Nothing else, is there? Okay, we'll close the meeting at 7:12.